Hi, I'm Scott Cooper, and this is the Tales from the Trail podcast by Matchplay. In this episode, Justin Chesham, head coach of Christopher Newport University men's soccer, and I welcome his counterpart for the women's team, Jamie Gunderson. Jamie, as head coach, has a national championship under his belt and is perennially in the hunt for a second. This episode gives great insight into how these two coaches have nurtured nationally prominent programs through tireless recruiting and great culture. Today's episode is brought to you by Pitch Invaders, the online apparel business dedicated to fostering community and growing soccer in the heart of America. Based in the vibrant soccer hub of Arlington, Virginia, Pitch Invaders proudly champions their slogan, "The Pitch is for the People." Their mission? To unite soccer enthusiasts nationwide through their unique blend of casual and athletic gear. But Pitch Invaders isn't just about clothing. They're about collaboration, partnering with clubs, associations, and more. They create exclusive merch designs that promote their brands together. And here's the kicker. Partners receive a revenue split on collaborative merch sales to help support them. From the streets to the stadium, Pitch Invaders products boast soccer-related sayings on the back like, "You got nutmegged," "Press machine," and "Golazo getter." So whether you're cheering from the stands or dominating the field, gear up with Pitch Invaders and join the movement. Visit pitchinvadersusa.com to explore their latest collections and become part of something bigger. Use the code MATCHPLAY at checkout for 15% off your purchase. Pitch Invaders, the pitch is for the people. Hey, good morning. So, Jamie, you were just talking about, you know, early on in a kid and their relationship with you, and you're kind of observing and feeling out where they are as a player and as a person. So kind of maybe delve into a little bit of the criteria that you're looking for.
At first, you know, the initial email, that initial contact, and then from there we watch them play in person. And then, are they a good soccer player? Do they check, you know, the athleticism box, the technical box, the tactical box? And then from there, if they do, we continue that relationship. But then when we're getting kind of to the final stages of, do they get an offer? Do they not get an offer? Is those kind of extra things? Are they, you know, showing up on time before a game? Are they, you know, taking care of themselves, or is their parent doing all the work for them? Are they a good teammate? How do they respond to kind of going down a goal or scoring a goal? Are they cheering? Are they not cheering? Those things all do matter. Because at the end of the day, do they really fit the culture in the program that we want? And, you know, those are kind of like those kind of last tick boxes for us that we really look for in a player.
Yeah, I mean, look, once you're in the office, you know, that's probably the least realistic way we're going to know exactly who you are, because you're in our office. Usually mom and or dad is sitting there, and you're giving us, you know, this interview type scenario when we're at your games, like Jamie's talking about, or when you've sent us an email, or when we're talking to our players after you've come and visited and spent some time with our guys. If we're further along in the process, that's when we're going to really start to, okay, is this kid going to fit in our locker room or not? I don't think I've ever had a bad, where a kid's sitting in my office and it's not going well, like the kid's going to be back. I mean, they're always trying to do their absolute best in that moment. We've had some shy kids, you know, maybe that's the worst situation, but you know, a lot of those kids are on my roster now. So, you know, I think Jamie's right. I think we're watching all of that. You know, great, you scored a goal, but then you ran to the corner and, you know, made some obscene gesture or said something to the referee or the opposing team as you scored. And that's just such a turnoff for us. And, you know, we're always sitting together. We're always talking to each other. And, you know, I've told other coaches, like, yeah, I saw this kid do that, you know, so we're out on him. And that coach may be okay with it, but usually the case is, oh, he did what? And then it's over. You know, a lot of us we're finding reasons. We need to find reasons to not want you. I mean, realistically, there's 100 kids I could take. And why am I going to take these 10 versus the next 10? And, you know, all those little itty bitty reasons, they just really add up quickly, and they give us the reasons that we're looking for to go to the next person.
Right. I guess there's probably not as many obscene gestures in the women's game as there is in the men's game.
No, most celebrations are hugging each other.
The PG rated. Yeah.
And I think it varies per program too. Like if you look at it, I think we're Cheese and I are at a university that we can be really picky, where some may not be so much. And again, that's like Cheese mentioned, like a player may not be a good fit for us, but maybe a great fit for this other program. And it's just what the criteria is. And again, I think we're at a university that we can be really picky and kind of have, let's say, 10 items that we look at and like, yep. And then if they don't hit two of them, it's like, well, then maybe they're not going to be the best fit for us.
Right. So that brings us to a pretty quick intro here. You guys are at a university where you can be picky because you guys win. Justin Chesham is the head men's coach at Christopher Newport University in Newport News, Virginia. Does a lot of winning, and look them up. Their program is fantastic historically and now. And then we have Jamie Gunderson, who is the head women's coach at Christopher Newport. They're on different screens, but you guys are in the same building, aren't you? Jamie has a national championship under his belt. So you started your career off winning. And I mean, it's got to keep going up, right?
Yes.
So, Scott, I appreciate you starting with me. And then, like, I don't want to go after that. I mean, let's.
That was definitely intentional, Cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for those of you listening, we always, for the first time to Justin, we always call him Cheese. So that's kind of a natural thing. So if you hear us calling somebody Cheese, it's the men's coach at Christopher.
I'm Cheese.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about, you know, maybe some more differences between recruiting for the women's program versus a men's program. There's some timeline differences, right?
Yeah. I'll kind of hit on that. We started about almost probably a year earlier. So we're in the thick of the 24s or the juniors in high school right now. Mm-hmm. Some programs, most of the big time D1s are probably, you know, have most of their class done already for that. For the juniors. Yeah. So they've been committing juniors probably since the tail end of the summer of 22.
Gotcha.
Now this next wave, kind of maybe like the mid majors are kind of coming in and they're getting most of their class done. And then now the next wave, which I think we're in, is kind of right after that mid major tier, where we can, again, the facilities and what we can offer here at SUNY allows us to kind of get into that next wave. So we've been watching the 24s for a year and a half now, almost going on 2 years, which is kind of crazy to think about, but that's just the way and the nature of how recruiting has gone. And it starts from the top down and it trickles down. We didn't, and I think COVID has kind of thrown a wrench in this a little bit. Our classes, our last two classes have taken a little bit longer than a typical class. I guess that's COVID. I don't know. Maybe that's the new norm. Maybe, you know, the recruits are actually, you know, taking their time and really doing their homework to make sure they have the right fit. So just a reference again, we 23, we just kind of finished that class about a month ago. And the one recruit that we were waiting on, she was just making sure like the scholarship kind of part, academic scholarships that we offer, kind of she got. And she did, and then everything kind of fell in line from there. But we had offered her, gosh, probably November of 22.
Okay.
So it was just kind of that process of like making sure the financial, and she got the scholarship to really solidify her decision. And right. That was kind of on the school's part in the timeline of when they could actually say, yep, we got the scholarship.
Right.
But yeah, so we're in the thick of the 24s. We have an offer out right now. Jeff Cups this weekend, which is a big weekend. So I would say we probably offered, you know, maybe 3 or 4 more after this weekend. And then kind of go through the summer of 23 and get probably 3/4 of the class done by then.
Mm-hmm.
And then always leave. We always leave kind of like, you know, 1 or 2 spots open going into the fall, just, you know, just in case somebody maybe was injured or they were, they had a plan and it didn't work out. So we're always kind of, you know, never really closing our class until, you know, maybe after the fall. I think.
Right.
Go ahead. I mean, everything's kind of a trickle down. You know, I mean, you know, we're Division III, and like Jamie said, the timelines are, of course, a little different. I remember coaching a girls' team, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago now, and they were all freshmen in high school, and one of them was a pretty special kid. I think she ended up in an ACC school, but as a freshman, during the fall of her freshman year, so she's 14 at best, I'm getting a phone call from that, you know, top, you know, Power 5 school, asking about this girl and trying to, you know, get her to come visit the school. And they were all about her, and she's a freshman. I mean, it's the timeline is very, very interesting. I mean, you're talking 4 more years before she even gets there. And that's assuming she can help you day one as a freshman. You're probably looking at 5 years before she even steps on your field as a, like, a major contributor. So it is, it's a weird timeline on the men's side. The trickle down is, you know, we're talking about a lot of kids that are leaving now to go pro or go overseas even. And then kind of from there, you know, the top D1 schools and then down from there. And so all of our timelines kind of fit in from there. But, you know, the couple of things that I've seen that I would be very concerned with, you know, and kind of jumping in with the timeline here, is a pretty good coach that I'm very familiar with up in Northern Virginia, that he coached an amazing girls team. They won a national title. They were a really, really good team. One of his girls ended up here at Christopher Newport playing with Jamie, and the rest of them, I think all of them went Division I. At least, you know, 90% of the girls that went off to play went Division I. And he's a really good friend of mine. He's telling me about his team, and he's just shaking his head, and he says, yeah, most of them committed sophomore in the early junior year, and 9 of them transferred during their freshman year. And, I mean, you're just shaking your head. I can't imagine how many kids go through this in some capacity. And, you know, I asked him what you think the main problem was. And he said, well, as soon as one committed, like 12 committed right after that, because they were all like, oh, no, she committed or he committed. I have to commit now. And I can't stress enough that that is just the wrong approach. You have to think of this as your future 4 years, what are you going to invest your money in now? As I've said in the other podcast, if there's a big scholarship sitting on your plate and they're kind of saying, hey, we need to know, well, then you may have to speed up your position a little bit. But for the 99% of us that aren't getting that scholarship, you need to take your time. Make sure this is the right fit. You don't really want to transfer. Nobody commits to a school thinking, oh, I'm just going to leave here in a year. You know, that's not the goal. And so, you know, taking your time and making sure that this is the right fit, going through it, vet the process as well as we're vetting you. I mean, we're, like I said, we're watching you play multiple times. We're making you spend time with our players. We're going to spend time with you ourselves. We're going to watch you on and off the field. Well, you need to do that same thing for us. You need to watch our school. Go on campus. Be there when the kids are walking around. You know, go in and out of buildings and spend some time with our players and really find out, like, oh, wow, this is home. You know, because the ultimate question is simple. If I never play 1 second, which most kids think, well, what if I break my leg or something? Well, what if Coach Jamie or Coach G just never plays you? You know, that's also a possibility. Every team has players that doesn't play. What if you become one of those players? Are you still going to be happy at that school? That's the only question that ever matters. And I kind of drifted there for the timeline situation here, but it's always comes back to the exact same question. Always comes back to it.
Yeah, but I mean, these schools are recruiting them so early that they feel like they have to make that commitment, right? In order to not miss an opportunity. So it just makes what you're saying even more important to not take the decision lightly and to get on campus and to really understand how the coach is doing things and who the players are and what the culture is like within the team and that sort of thing. So that's what we're trying to do here.
Go ahead. Yeah, and I tell kids all the time, it's like, well, just what's the problem with telling the coach you're not ready yet? You know, what's the problem with saying like, hey, I love it. Thanks for the offer. I'm super interested in your school, but I still want to come visit one more time. I want to spend more time with the girls or the boys. And I'm not just ready today to make this decision. And then basically you're putting it back on their plate. I mean, the overwhelming majority of kids fall into this trap where they feel like they have to, and then they just jump into a decision when they haven't even tested it. They haven't even said like, well, can you give me a month? Can you wait? Because I would love to do this, this, and this. I haven't spent any time in the nursing school or the business school or whatever it is that they want to study. I haven't done all of my research yet. I really like your school, but I want to come by and visit another time. I want to spend more time with you in your office or watch you run your practice session and just see what they say. You know, see what they say from there. I mean, if you're not one of these full ride kids where, you know, like, well, look, it's either I give you this full ride or I give this other kid the full ride and I need to know right now. You know, like, I'm sure there's some of those situations. And yeah, that's a tough one. You're going to have to probably get in the car and drive right now to go visit that place or hop on a plane, like, give me 24 hours, you know, something like that. I would understand. But for the overwhelming majority of kids, that's not on the table. And so when you're offered these things, just if you're not ready yet, tell the coach you're not ready yet. And from what I've seen when I've given that advice to kids, if the coach really wants the kid, they're going to say, oh, cool. Well, yeah, why don't you come back next weekend? You know, like, they're 100% open. I've seen it happen so many times. I mean, the advice that I've given kids is take your time, tell the coach you're not ready yet if you're not ready yet, and work with them. They're willing to work with you.
Yeah, I agree with that, with what Chief was saying. And that's the advice I give recruits that we communicate with is, you know, and I don't, when I give an offer, I don't really give a deadline, but I am transparent about it. Say, you know, when I do give an offer, we're in the top one or two of their list. And then, you know, if it starts to take a little longer, like maybe a month or two, then it's like, okay, what's really going on? And so just, you know, having that relationship with them and so they can be open about it is really key. And again, it is a big decision. You know, we don't want people to transfer. So make sure you're doing your homework. And like Chief said, it's like, if you need it more time, ask for more time. And if a coach really likes you, they're going to wait. If they don't, then that's a tell sign that, you know, they didn't really want you. And then you've made the right decision.
Yep. So what I know that the transfer portal on the men's side is, you know, larger than it's, has a larger number of players in it than ever before. Is that fair, Chiefs?
Yeah, I just think it's more, I mean, it's just become such a big avenue for kids to look into. And, you know, you hear transfer portal, a lot of it has to do with the big time football kid or the basketball kid that, you know, like, oh, he's going to enter the portal. And then all this crazy NIL stuff is coming to play now. You know, but on the soccer side specifically, yeah, I mean, I look at it way more than ever before. Most people do. I think COVID exacerbated that a little bit, you know, and the Division I schools weren't allowed to recruit for a whole year. And so, you know, they were hitting the portal pretty hard, you know, given what may have seemed like a more proven commodity versus something that they couldn't even put their eyes on, you know, or they did the international route with something that they've known a little bit better off that probably was going to help them right away. So because of that, it's kind of grown because of that. I mean, there's a lot of kids now that are, you know, panicking, rushing into decisions, and then they're ending up in the portal. And it's become a very, very ugly, kind of necessary thing for all of us. You know, I check it probably 3 to 4 times a day. Or I checked it once this morning. I'll check it after the podcast. No, it's just the extra way of recruiting. You know, Chris Norris has said it a bunch of times. We have to, you know, lift up every stone. We have to look in every single crevice to find the right kids to come to our roster and be big pieces of the program. And well, that one is, I just enter my password and I have a list of kids that are potential recruits. And there's a lot of details there. And so we have to look at that.
Right. Jamie, you find in the same experience with the
world? Yeah, it's more accessible now. Like, again, people, you can just get in the portal now. And I don't check it as much as Cheese does, but I do check it. You know, it is an avenue that previously before COVID we weren't really using. If somebody was transferring, it would likely they just reached out to us and it wasn't something we would look for kind of thing. But now it's right in front of you and you can see who's there. And the way I use it is if like I've had a previous relationship with them through the recruiting process, I'll reach out to them kind of thing, or, you know, hopefully they've reached out to us. But yeah, it's like she's put it in great, good words. It's like, it's kind of ugly, but it is what it is right now. And this is the, you know, what it is because of COVID. And people can just transfer. And so, but you got to find the right fit if they're good for the program kind of thing too, at the end of the day. So you still have to do your homework, but it's a different way to recruit.
Keys, you just texted me and said I'm frozen. Can you at least hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Okay.
Is it frozen on yours too, Jamie?
No, you're good.
So it's just mine.
Yeah, I mean, I got shorts and flip-flops on, man. I'm not frozen.
Loose around. I don't know if that's messing it up.
You guys got janky. All right, so that's like not a good recruiting thing is to say you have janky internet at your university, you know?
Mine's working just fine, so I don't know. What, he's over in the dungeon, I guess. I don't know
how I'm going to play FIFA if your internet's no good. So yeah, I want to back it up just a little bit and talk a little bit about Jamie, especially for you. You know, we talked about starting earlier, mm-hmm. and so a kid is interested in coming to the area that you guys are in, and they know that Christopher Newport is an outstanding college, university. And so when should they make an initial email to you or send you an initial email?
Yeah, probably the tail end of their sophomore year, what I would say, just to get the starting process in that. Not necessarily that we will go watch them. We'll have to look at our schedule when we go to recruiting events, and if it aligns with when you're mapping it all out, then yeah, we'll come check you out kind of thing. But for us, we can correspond when they're freshmen.
Right.
What I do, and it's something, I guess, a personal thing, but like if somebody reaches out to me, I feel like they've done enough where I can correspond with them, or I will correspond with them. So I'll send them a little note or something here and there. But yeah, I would say probably the tail end of the sophomore year, because kind of like, again, Jeff Cuff is kind of this, I wouldn't say finalizing, but kind of the point of when we'll start offering for the 20, mm-hmm. for the whatever, now the juniors. So,
right.
But then PDA, which is the Memorial Day tournament for us, which is a big one up in Jersey, we will hopefully be done with a good portion of that junior class that are going to be seniors. And then now that sophomore class that's going to be juniors, that's kind of the initial starting point of like really watching them.
Right.
And then through the fall, watch them, you know, and then that's the next cycle, Jeff Cup, and then kind of those kind of from there. So that's what I would say. It's, again, different per universities. Like, I would imagine if you're at a Power 5 school and you're good enough to play it there, you probably right. want to start as a freshman, but they also probably know who you are kind of thing too from just watching. So yeah. But yeah, that's kind of our timeline with that. It doesn't have to be a ton of information. You can just be like, I play for this club team, I'm interested in this kind of field of study, here's my class, the number, what events you're going to be at kind of thing. So
yeah.
Keep it pretty simple at that point. And then as you get further along in the process, then it's like, okay, how's your family? Who's like, do you have siblings? Do you have that? What does this look like? What are you interested in? Are there hobbies? Those kind of things to make it more personal from there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you is what, for you, what constitutes a good email? You know, you win. So you get a lot of emails.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, kids are attracted to your program because you have, you know, a good program. So how does a kid, differentiate herself when she's writing you and just not become an email that gets passed over?
Yeah, I mean, she's has mentioned this a bunch of times, is the homework piece. And, like, you know, maybe a little snippet about, like, great season last year, you know, here's your record or whatever. Or slash, we've recently, you know, again, I keep saying Jeff Cup because it's just this weekend and we've got a ton of emails coming through. There's a handful of recruits that have, like, our men's basketball team just won the national championship last weekend. And they've said, that's awesome. Congratulations to them. So that little snippet, like, adds an extra element into it where they've actually, like, oh, they've gone on the website. They've said, oh, wow, the men's team has just won. So that actually, you know, sparks my interest a little bit more because they're more invested in the actual school.
Right.
Kind of thing. And then, you know, the general information, like, quick to the point, I don't need a massive of your history of soccer, like,
right,
that's great, but I'll find that out when talking to you, kind of thing. So just those key bullet points: your club team, when you're playing, your number, your grad year, and maybe what you're interested in studying, kind of thing. And then from there, like, we'll have a phone call if we need to, and then I can find out all that other personal information.
You keep mentioning Jefferson Cup, which is in Richmond, Virginia. It's a huge national tournament attended by a ton of college coaches. And so you guys, you know, kids go down the list of colleges attending, and, you know, some colleges will allow themselves to be, you know, register that they're attending the event, and some don't. So I guess my question to both of you, you guys can flip a coin to see who goes first, but like, and you kind of touched on this, Jamie, but what are some things that you guys need to know leading into it? You know, what's a good effective email? What does it contain as you're running into, you know, a week out from tournament like the Jeff Cup?
Yeah, I'll touch on this a little bit. I mean, look, Jamie and I, all of us, we have a niche. We're gonna know going into a tournament. We're gonna make a schedule, regardless on who's emailed us, and we're going to know, like, I have to see this group, have to see this group. You know, we're a state school, so we're gonna do our homework on the state teams, and it's a little different once you get in a private school that might be recruiting the entire country. They may have to be a little more precise, but we will, of course, go into the schedule with already having the highlighted teams. Now, what's going to get me excited about some kid from Missouri is going to be what Jamie was touching on earlier. He wrote us. He said, look, I love seeing you for this reason. This is why it's a perfect fit for me academically or socially. And something that really grabs my attention, like, oh, okay, he's done his homework. He loves this place. And then you attach that little snippet of, oh, wow, you're on this really good club team, or you're in one of the higher brackets, or, you know, in your video, you scored a great goal, or you're this, you know, good looking kid. And I'm like, oh, I got to at least go put my eyes on you. You could do that. I just described that in 15 seconds. You could do that in a paragraph or two, where I'm like, okay, there's the attachment. There's some reason for me to come watch you play that's soccer related. Then you're going to throw in just the details. Like, here's my schedule, location, field, what jersey number I'm wearing. And I really look forward to seeing you play. That's something you could do in what's going to take me a minute to read, or less, and I can watch a video that's 2 minutes long after you grab my attention. Then I'm going to add you to the schedule that I'm already kind of working with here. So I feel like that's how most people will operate. I think once you get into the private schools that are maybe super high academic, that are recruiting the entire country, it's going to have to be more flipped on that, where they're really looking for these kids that have done their homework on the school, or maybe they're treating the event as, I'm going here to watch these kids that I've already started a relationship with. I'm just keeping up with them, depending on the timeline. But in an email, short, sweet, something that really attaches it to us, something that makes it personal, from your Gmail or your Yahoo, or something that's a personal email with personal touch to our school, just like you would want from us. You know, you don't want me to send a mass email out to 500 kids. You want it, hey, little Johnny, you know, loved watching you play in your game yesterday, something specific about you. We want that exact same thing. And once you find that, we're going to at least do our homework on you. You're going to at least get us to come sit down and put our eyes on you for a game.
Jamie, got anything to add? Or is that
no,
pretty
I
much?
Mean, that recently, again, the Jeff Cup is a massive tournament for us. And I keep kind of going back to that because, I've gotten a ton of emails coming through. And some recruit just emailed me. Don't know much about her, but she plays for academy team. She's in one of the top divisions. So, and she's from out of state. So it's like, okay, well, there's a couple things you've already checked that now I'm like, okay, that sparked my interest. Now we're going to come watch you play because, you know, this might be the only time we get to see you play. Plus, again, you come from a good club and you're going to be at the event we're going to be at kind of thing.
Right. So.
My favorite email, though, is the one on Saturday of a Friday through Sunday tournament where it's like, hey, I hope you saw me play yesterday. I got a game in 3 hours. I hope you can come watch me play while I'm already sitting down watching games at that event. Those are the emails that are, you know, I'll read them, but it's going to be a couple of days later and I'm going to laugh. Those are actually more common than you would think.
Yeah.
It kind of blows your mind. Like, oh, wow, you emailed me on Saturday of a 3-day event. That's great. That's great.
Yeah, I would say you should email this stuff about a week before or that Monday before that weekend coming up kind of thing. I know a lot of coaches that they'll stop adjusting their schedule, let's say the Wednesday before that Friday or whatever it may be, that they're done because they're traveling, they're doing all these other things, right? They're coming from all over, so they may be flying and, you know, maybe have like an 8-hour drive, whatever it may be. So they'll have a hard cutoff. Like anybody emails me after this date, that, you know, I'm not going to add them to my schedule kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I've been at these events with you guys and, you guys are hustling for sure. And it's, your schedule is maxed out and you know exactly where you're going to go and who you need to see. And if someone's late to the game, then they risk not getting what they want, you know? So, be respectful of these guys when you're making a request, right? And, you know, just to hit the wave tops of what you just said. So make sure that, you know, you're doing a little research and you're personalizing each email that you send out to these coaches. It takes a little extra time, but make sure you know what CNU is and a little bit about it. And as you know, about every college that you're writing, make sure that you personalize things and don't, as you know, one of Cheese's favorite things is to just throw everyone in a carbon copy and say, "Dear coach." So that's probably not going to work out the best for you.
Yeah.
So you guys are at the event, you know, at this point, and you got an interest in a kid who wrote you. You saw some video. They match up academically. They've done everything right so far, and you're watching their match. And you know what's their play? They're fine. Like they're athletic. They're doing well. They may have even scored a goal. So what's gonna Can you think of a story that has happened in your while you're watching matches where a kid has pretty much eliminated themselves based on something they did aside from play, but within the match or even not, you know, after the match or whatever? You think of a specific story?
Yeah, I mean, there's
probably 100 of them, but
yeah, I there's a couple, like, you know, they're good players, but again, you know, if they get subbed off and then their coach is trying to talk to them and they are disinterested or they're just like, not, they don't care, that's a big red flag for me. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't going to work because you think you know everything and you're better than everything. And it's just, that's happened a few handful of times. You know, I think, yeah, I just those kind of things to me are just big no-nos. And it's like, we'll stop. And, you know, I'll tell them that it's like, here's the situation. It's like, this is what I saw, and this isn't going to work out kind of thing. So we're always watching, even if you don't think we are. Like, we'll show up before to watch warmups because we want to. I want to see how they interact with their teammates. Are they, you know, off the side with their headphones in, you know, which I understand some players like to get, you know, kind of focused in that way. But, you know, also, are they like, you know, joking around, laughing, having a good time? I think that's important too. Or again, if they are the complete opposite, where they show up 5 minutes before, they're over there just tying their cleats, that's another situation. It's like, what's really going on kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, that's happened before for us. I wouldn't say it's frequently, but it does happen.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the big stories where, you know, a kid, their team scored a goal and he kind of runs over and basically does something terrible to the other kid in some trash talk way that would immediately get him a card in the college game, or, you know, like you've seen those big incidents. Yeah. You know, I talked on one podcast where the kid, you know, basically cussed at the ref and talked about, like, are you kidding me, bro? Or some, I don't know, use something that I don't understand what it means anymore. So, but I'll tell you, those are the easy ones. Those are ones like, oh, everybody in the facility knows that kid just hurt himself. But the ones that are kind of a little more subtle, you know, we don't find them subtle after doing this for long enough, but I can't stand it when something happens. You know, usually it's after a big goal or after a bad play or something, and it's immediate start blaming others, start pointing the finger, start arguing with your coach, you know, or, you know, start immediately trying to, like, oh, well, it wasn't on me, it was on this kid. Like, that stuff drives me insane. You know, I'll see if that's a theme or if that was a one-time off thing, but, you know, we've all had bad reactions to a bad situation. So if you're doing that frequently, and I'm talking like two or three times, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do well with that, because you're not going to make it out of much training. You know, I love a guy that's like, oh, okay, what happened here? Whether he took accountability for it or he immediately goes like, all right, this is what I saw. What did you see? You know, like, just didn't want to work together. Well, that's okay, cool. You know, you guys made a mistake. Try to fix it immediately. Cool. Now you're trying not to make that same mistake again. Another one that I just can't stand is when a kid is always looking at us. Like, by us, I mean the coaches, because we're all usually sitting together, does something, turns and looks, does something, turns and looks, whether it was good or bad. And you're like, just go play the game, man. I don't want you looking at me in our games. Like, what are you doing here? Those are kind of the big ones that I see more than I'd like to see. And I definitely don't want that to be a theme of a player. One kid I saw a couple years ago, their team scored a goal. It was kind of lucky, weird bounce. And he wasn't even a part of the play. Came over and bowed in front of us, did this thing and bowed right in front of the entire slate of coaches watching. And we're all like, okay, buddy. And then sure enough, that 1-0 lead led to a 3-1 loss within a few minutes. And we're all kind of like, yeah, all right. I don't think he's playing in college now that I think about it. But yeah, those are just turnoffs. Like I said, we like 100 kids a year. Don't separate yourself the wrong way. Separate yourself the correct way. And those little turnoffs I'm not a fan of those at all.
Yeah. What are you guys a fan of? Like, you know, what have you seen that have been positive reactions that are memorable? That you're like, that is someone who I would love to have in my program because of the way they handled a certain, you know, some adversity or, you know, a bad call or getting down earlier, you know, whatever the case may be. So what's been a positive reaction in adversity that's impressed you? And, you know, maybe talk to a kid that you weren't there to see necessarily. Can you think of any of those times?
Yeah. I mean, it's the flip side of it that we just kind of mentioned is I like to see, you know, teammates celebrating their teammates. So if there's a big tackle or, you know, they clear ball off the line or, you know, there's a big goal, maybe they're not even involved in the play and they're going to sprint to their teammate to, you know, give them a high five or hug them or whatever it may be. I think that's huge. Or even if they're on the bench, they're engaged, they're cheering, they're, you know, trying to help. their team to be successful and not, like, basically doing whatever they can to help the team. And then right. what Cheese mentioned is, like, say they do get scored on or there's a bad call. It's like, okay, next player, what did we do? How can I help my teammates? It's like, well, maybe your center back partnership, you're too spread out. And it's like, just talk to your other center backs, like, hey, we need to be tighter together so they don't split us down the middle kind of thing, or whatever it may be, is that they're trying to help the situation rather than blame others and, you know, be really selfish. It's, you know, doing those extra actions to like selflessness actions for their teammates.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a younger coach and figuring out what type of head coach I wanted to be, still figuring that out, actually. But there were things that really stood out to me, and those I'll remember forever. I mean, I remember a game, a CNU game, NCAA game, and we're down 2-0, and we're shaking our head why we're down 2-0. The shot count's very, very much in our favor. It's one of those typical soccer games where you're just like, what is going on here? Why can't we score these goals and they're scoring those? Like, we've all been a part of it, soccer, right? And it's a battle, but we're all seem to be like, we're going to go get this game back, except one guy. And he's in all of our history books and stuff. So he's watching this. He might know who I'm talking about, but he scores a goal to make it 2-1. And instead of just grabbing the ball, putting it back, we got business to take care of. He had to make sure he ran over to his buddies in the crowd and like jump and celebrate and kind of be a donkey. And I just remember sitting there like, what are you doing? Just go get the ball. We're still losing. And that type of play happened on our CNU campus. And I will always try to avoid that type of player in the recruiting process. I want maturity. And Jamie already said the other key word is selfish. I do not like someone that's you're playing because of your goal, because of your stats, because of hopefully your picture on the website, you know, something like that. That type of stuff drives me insane. And so, you know, Scott, you asked if we've seen certain things. And when I define maturity, when I see like, oh, a kid settled a teammate down that just had a bad call against him, or, you know, patted him on the butt for, hey man, forget it, forget that play, let's move on, you know, something like that. That kid's like, gotcha, you know, like, okay. And he's back in, or, you know, something's going on and he's having a discussion with the official, not arguing or having a problem with it. Or I saw a kid score a pretty nice goal and the guy ran over that I was recruiting, and like, he couldn't be more excited for the guy that passed the awesome pass. That, I mean, it was just a cool thing. It's like, man, I know the kid scored inside the six on the tap in, but that guy played a great ball and he went and congratulated him. You know, those are the things that show like, hey, it's a bigger picture. It's not just about me. That's huge for us. You know, we're taking notes on all of those.
I mean, it is just a measure of maturity, isn't it? I mean, you're asking young people to be more mature so that for the greater good, really. And you want to see examples of that when you're watching them play. And that goes beyond how good of an athlete they are. So it's just something else to be mindful of when you're competing.
Well, a lot of times once you're at certain levels, and we like to think that, you know, both of our programs are at this level, what is going to separate one team loaded with a lot of talent versus another team loaded with a lot of talent? And well, those are the little things that are going to separate you, you know, maturity and making sure that you are doing the right thing every single time and not letting something small snowball into something big. And I mean, that's always been the case. I mean, look at the fine line between winning and losing, especially once you're in the tournament or you're in a huge game, and it's soccer, for crying out loud. I mean, the scores are always so low and the margins are so tiny at all times. We have to look at all of those little details and they add up. You know, something small is going to happen to every single one of us. How do you handle it? It's really the true measure of what type of player you are. Almost everybody that's on our team and that we're playing against is good enough to be on the field in that moment, but how are you handling all the little small things that are thrown your way is going to be a separator.
Yep. And the other thing that you guys observe is parents and, you know, how they behave during a match. And I mean, that can greatly influence your guys' decision? I mean, what's some of the things that you guys have observed where you, it was a head scratcher, or you said to yourself, I don't want that anywhere near my program, possibly, you know?
You want to go, Cheese, or you want me to go?
I don't know if I've seen too much in the recruiting process during the games. You know, I try not to sit on the parent sideline. I'm usually away from a lot of people. I guess I've heard some parents yelling or whatever, but I can't really tell whose kid is whose. I guess if it's if I'm already pretty far along with the kid, I guess I would know their parents, but most of the time they're pretty sane. They like to come up to us. I've already met with them. The parents that I worry about are before all that, the ones that are, you know, constantly leading the charge, you know, leading the, I can't stand when a kid says, or a parent says, hi, my son would like to be recruited by you guys. I'm like, okay, then your son should have written the email. And I guess the biggest one that I have a problem with is when they're sitting in the office and I ask a question, I'm looking directly at the kid, I'm asking a question to the kid, and the kid immediately turns to mom or dad waiting for an answer. And then mom immediately answers, or dad immediately answers, rather than just, well, he asked you the question, not me. That's the one I'm looking for. And the kid's like, oh yeah, you know, I got to do this. And, I'm recruiting the kid. I mean, I'm sensitive to the fact that it's your child and it's your money. You know, I get that. And that's why I want you in the meeting as well. And I want you to be able to ask questions. But at the end of the day, those 4 years, I'm going to be spending with your child, not with you. And, let them go a little bit, let them answer the questions. Don't try to overtake the whole thing. Be involved. It's got to be a happy medium. You know, the flip side of that, we talked about this one time with Norris. I also don't want a parent that's like, it's their decision. Whatever they decide to do, it's up to them. It's like, man, that kid needs a little bit of assistance here, a little bit of nudge. Like, don't forget about this. Think about this. You know, so make sure you're involved, but let them be the lead. Let them be in charge.
Yeah, I think just be supportive as a parent and let their child take the lead on everything. They may need help along the way, but, you know, if they're on campus and the parent's answering every question, you know, I understand there's some shy people, but at the end of the day, we're recruiting that player, not the parent, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, making sure there's that happy medium balance between it. I have, on the flip side of things, when we're at the field and I know parents are yelling and things like that, there's sometimes where I'm like, I do not want to recruit that kid's or that parent's kid. That does happen, and I'll like figure out who it is too. It's just, you know, they're screaming at the ref or whatever it may be. They're screaming at their child. It's like, just let them play. It's, you know, it's a game. And if you're doing that, what's the reaction of that player / then you get to the next level where things may be even more amplified because, you know, club soccer, there's a lot of showcases now. So, you know, you may lose a game. It doesn't really matter all that much. Where you get to the college game, you lose one game, it could matter a lot. Sure. So, you know, the reaction of that, their child, and how they, you know, do they like that? Do they not like that? Most of the time they don't like it. And most of the time I don't want that part of our program to, you know, maybe influence the ref while we're playing the game. So I have, again, figured out whose parent that is. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to go down that route. It's not worth it, kind of thing.
Yeah, I went to a high school game once. I usually don't recruit high school, but it was local. And a kid that I was bringing in, a kid that I had committed, was playing. And I was, I'll go check in on the kid. And I saw dad. So I go up and sit next to dad. And the kid wasn't starting. And for whatever reason. And until the kid subbed in for that 20 minutes or something, the dad was just every little mistake that, you know, the dad had an expectation of the kid playing a certain position. And wow, the stuff coming out of his mouth about somebody else's kid, a teammate of his son, with every mistake the kid made, whether it was a mistake or not, it was a mistake in his eyes, just vocal about him, just sitting there. And I can't help but think, well, what's going to happen when that kid is on my team? And I'm not starting him, or I subbed him out, or he's not playing the correct position according to dad. What's he saying up in our stands, and what type of cancer is he now spreading across the parent landscape? I mean, those are the, it was such a turnoff for me. I mean, you know, I had to say something to him. I just kind of had to remind him. We tell our parents in preseason. So if you want to send me an email, okay, I'm not going to respond. I'm just going to show your son your email, and he's going to talk to you. You know, like, I will always talk to your kids. My door is always open. They can call me. I've had kids call me at 3 a.m. before. Like, I'm available to your children. And if it's not something like that's an emergency, you probably shouldn't be calling me unless you want to talk football or beer or something like that. I don't want to talk about how I'm coaching. I sure as heck don't want to talk about another kid. And if you're a parent that's trying to talk about those things, it's really, it's inappropriate, and really stay away from that. We will avoid that at all costs.
Yeah. It's been said before on this podcast, and it's been said, many times. Someone's always watching. And the other point is that you guys are a close-knit group as coaches. Not, you know, outside of your respective universities, you guys sit on those sidelines and you talk to each other. A lot of the club coaches know you guys. And so word is going to get out to the people who are making the decisions, you know, meaning you guys. And if a club coach says this dad is a nightmare, then you're going to investigate that and get an understanding of how big of a nightmare the dad is, or the parents are, or that sort of thing. So, just always have that in the back of your mind that someone's always watching. That's really key when you're trying to get somewhere that you want to go. What else? You guys have any good stories, you know, of things you've seen over the winter? Oh, I know what I wanted to touch on actually was, so after these club tournaments this spring, kids will probably be looking to go to ID camps and that sort of thing this summer. How important is that to you guys? How do they prepare physically? How do they let you guys know? I mean, obviously, if they come to the camp, they know, you guys know that they're interested in you. So, you know, walk through, if you were in their shoes, the process of leading up to the summer and ID camps and that sort of thing. Jamie, if you want to go. She's been talking a lot. No, I got to cut him off sometime.
That's fair.
It's okay. Cheese likes to talk. It's all good. My advice for ID camps is, you know, start with a broad kind of picture at the beginning, but don't do like, you know, 10 of them.
Right.
It's really, you know, really pinpoint those schools that maybe have a dream school, you know, do one of those, and then maybe have, you know, some more attainable schools that fit your level of play that check your academic boxes, and, you know, maybe the soccer piece that you're really interested in, and the location, and, you know, that kind of homework, that we, you know, tell all of our recruits kind of what to do at the beginning stages. And then go check them out. We do two a year. And it's only seeing new coaches at the ID camps. So, you know, ours are a little bit smaller. We're a little bit around like 40 people per camp. You know, one, typically our winter camp, we'll have our committed players come to that. And then that's a really good indicator to match up against some of those players. I don't know how other schools do that. But we tie it in with our banquet. We have a banquet, year-end banquet as well. So we'll get the committed kids to come back. They'll do an overnight that weekend, come to the banquet, and then play together. And then also then we can use them as kind of a litmus test for these players that have come to that camp kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, I think it's good, and they're long days. So really prepare your body to make sure you're, you know, sleeping properly, eating, you know, hydrating and all that. Because the way we run ours, it's basically from 9 till 5, but you get like maybe a 2.5 hour break in between to split it up kind of thing. But I wouldn't overdo it. I know a lot of recruits are going all over the place from ID camp to ID camp. I just think that kind of is a waste of money. So again, doing your homework, maybe make a list of, let's say, 5 or 6 camps then maybe you want to do that again, that check your criteria and then go check them out. I think it's a good indicator for us if they do come to our AIT camp that they're very interested. So that is a kind of another tier of the recruiting process. It's like, okay, they come to our AIT camp, they've come to campus, they've seen that. So that kind of starts to put them up on the kind of the recruiting pool or the list that we have kind of thing too. And I don't think it's an end all be all kind of thing. So if you can't make it, it's not like, okay, well, they didn't come to an ID camp, we're not going to recruit them, because there's plenty of recruits that we have or players on the team that we have that haven't come to our camps. But there's also a lot that have. So.
Yeah, it's just another step in the recruiting process, just another avenue for us to watch kids. I mean, I think the best thing Jamie said was do your homework first, then look at camps. You know, so let's say you're a freshman, you're really young, you haven't really started recruiting or anything like that. Well, you could still start to narrow your list down. And I would do that long before choosing a camp. But if you're young, and let's say your list is going to be pretty big at that point, you like these types of schools, maybe you like bigger schools, or I'm going to aim for the smaller schools, or I'm going to stay with the in-state schools because I want to be somewhat close to home. Well, good. You've already just narrowed it down dramatically. And maybe at the young ages, you can go to a camp that has, oh, we're going to have 10 schools there, and I really like 6 of them. Okay, well, cool. They probably haven't seen you play yet. Now's your opportunity to get in front of them. That's a great, great avenue. But once you get older, your list should be much, much, much smaller at that time. You've really identified who you are as a student. Maybe you've already picked exactly what you want to study in college. Your list should just be, 4, 5, 6 schools. Those are the camps you should really highlight to go after. And I always tell kids, if you're a really high academic kid and you've done really well, and exactly what you want to study, well, you should be picking. If those are the 4 or 5 schools you want to go to those ID camps. And whether it works out or not, still go to that school. And I'll work on maybe going on a tryout or just play club soccer at those places. You've earned that. You've earned that. You have a 4.5. You've earned that. You need to narrow it down from there. I got a story. I got a kid that I used to coach, and she was, I was asking her again. She's in her senior year. You heard Jamie earlier about the timeline. She's in her senior year. She wrote the school that she really wanted to go to again, which regardless of my attempts to try to tell her to not go to that place, the school responded with, well, we have another ID camp. Why don't you come to that? And so I asked the kid, well, what ID camp would this be? And she goes, this would be my 4th one there. I'm like, okay, and how many games have they come to see? 5. I said, so they've seen you 9, well, would be 9 times, and they need to see you more? I said, it doesn't sound like you're asking enough questions. It doesn't sound like you're really digging. And long story short, they want nothing to do with the girl, and I get it. And she ended up going somewhere else, and it didn't really work out there either, but she graduated from the school. But it was such a mind blower for me. I mean, how much money is that? How much time is that? You're putting a lot of eggs in one basket, and you should have been looking at other schools at that point. And I've seen that story far too often. And, I've got kids now, and once they grow up, it's going to be in the early process. We might have a broad search with the ID camps, but once we get older, it will be, well, my daughter really likes CNU. She's going to Jamie's camp, something along those lines. If it doesn't work out, she still loves the school, then she's going to still consider it.
I don't think I have anything else really for this one. Coming up on an hour, I try to keep them right at an hour. So, you guys have anything else? Nope. You miss anything? Cheese.
I thought there was a time I was going to talk about how, I mean, we've even helped each other in recruiting, across genders. I mean, it's happened where, he saw a kid do something and he brought it up to me, or I did the same for him. I wanted to say there was a time, Jamie, when you, you were walking across campus and you saw some kid playing on our field, and it was some kid I was recruiting, and you know, maybe he was either really polite or really rude to you. You know, I feel like that's happened before, because a lot of times it's the local soccer boys that are out there kicking around, and I might be recruiting the kid, and how they treat you is going to matter in the recruiting process for me. I mean, if they're a real jerk to you as you're asking them to, hey, don't do the ladder play, you know, don't go running through the ladder or dribbling through cones right in the middle of our training field. Can you do it off to the side? And they're super respectful about it. That goes a long way for me. And, you know, Jamie's going to tell me. And I've seen that situation play out in different – I don't have an exact story, but
– Well, I kind of have a story that goes along with that, because I helped with Lionsbridge. I helped coach with the USL2 team. And most of those players are college players. But sometimes we do have some youth guys come out there and train with us. So it's funny because, like, the local club, Legacy, are they called Legacy now, or what is it, Rain, or for the men's side? What is it for the men's side?
Legacy still exists, but the Rain is the
Rain.
CNL regional. Okay.
So Rain, so like some of the better players or the younger players from Rain will come and train in the mornings. And so, first of all, it's like 8 in the morning in the summertime. So you have a 16, 17-year-old kid showing up at that time. That, to me, speaks a lot about who they are. But then how they carry themselves in training. So I've talked to Cheese about some of these guys that showed up. And I'm like, hey, have you talked to this kid? What do you think of this kid? And, you know, they've shown really well in training. And so I asked, you know, they're not just jerks. They're good people. And so I've done that a few times. Cheese, on the flip side, is, you know, some of the females fairly well, because he was involved with, again, in Legacy at the time, coaching with the women's side in that group, in that club. John Trueblood, Cheese's assistant, he coaches Jamestown High School women. So he'll go play whatever high school, and he'll come back and be like, do you know this kid? So at the end of the day, the soccer community is small. And as we've kind of, a theme that keeps popping up is there's always someone watching. And so, wherever you are, just make sure you're doing the right things and being a good person at the end of the day, kind of thing. Because word of mouth, it will get around. I can't tell you the stories of, I meet somebody, and then like through like two connections, we know somebody. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, you played with this guy at this point, or you went here and you coached here. It's just it seems big, but it's not that big, the soccer community. So just make sure, you know, you're doing the right things.
For sure.
Someone's always watching, right?
They are.
Jeez, you got anything else?
I'm just really looking forward to your send-off. Are you going to throw some sort of, we'll be watching from the trail? Like, is there some new, or is it always going to end with the trail?
So Jamie, yeah, we're calling this podcast Tales from the Trail, like the recruiting trail. You know, it's kind of cheesy because I think he came up with it. Mm-hmm. So that's we were trying to incorporate that as our sign off for. So okay. Yes, remember, someone is always watching and can tell you tales from the trail.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Tales from the Trail podcast by MatchPlay. If you're enjoying the podcast and find it valuable, please consider visiting buymeacoffee.com/matchplay. These small donations collectively help offset costs and other expenses associated with production of the podcast, so I can continue to offer this service for free. Please take an extra minute to rate and review the podcast where you listen. This is a huge help. Share the podcast with whomever you think would be interested and will help in their process. Check us out on matchplayrecruit.com for our social media links. See you on the trail.